The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome, everyone. Also, those who joined later after my initial welcome. My name is Marjolein. She, her, on the Powhatan lands in Richmond, Virginia. And so now we'll have a Dharma talk and then some time for discussion and sharing as well. So last week, Dawn touched on the five hindrances and some practical ways to overcome hindrances and other obstacles. And so today I'd like to continue with that thread. And so I thought it might be interesting to look at some of the similes that the Buddha offers in the suttas around the five hindrances. And the Buddha usually or regularly used similes in the suttas. And this had, I think, several reasons. Some of them might be to help clarify his point. And also it made it easier for him or for the listeners to understand the teachings. And then often it can feel that the teachings come a bit more to life when the Buddha uses similes. So today I won't go into the practical advice on how to work with the hindrances. I recommend listening to Dawn's talk for that. It's more of like a reflective talk to look at some of those similes, look at some of those teachings around the hindrances. And so I'll give a brief overview of the five hindrances, go into just a little bit more depth than Dawn did last week. And they are very classical teachings in Buddhism. And they come back in many suttas. And there are five hindrances. Sensual desire is the first one. Second one is ill will. The third one is a double one, sloth and torpor. The fourth one is also a double one, restlessness and worry. And then the fifth one is doubt. And like Dawn also mentioned last week, the Pali term is Nivarana, which means covering. These are states of mind that cover something. And they cover our clear mind, or the ability to be mindful, or wisdom, or concentration. And the Buddha says, each of the hindrances are an obstruction, a hindrance, an encumbrance of the mind, a state that weakens wisdom. And then he continues, without having abandoned these five obstructions, hindrances, encumbrance of the minds, states that weaken wisdom, it is impossible that a practitioner with his powerless and feeble wisdom might know his own good, the good of others, or the good of both, or realize a superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. And then he gives a simile around this. He says, suppose a river were flowing down from a mountain, traveling a long distance with a swift current, carrying along much flotsam. Then on both of its banks, a man would open irrigation channels. In such a case, the current in the middle of the river would be dispersed, spread out and divided, so that the river would no longer travel a long distance with a swift current carrying along much flotsam. And so when the hindrances are present, one of these five states of mind that I just mentioned, or any other obstacle or difficulty that we might encounter in our meditation, then what the Buddha is actually saying is we might not know our own good, or the good of others, or the good of both. So in that sense, the hindrances obstruct the mind or cover over seeing the good in ourselves and others. And maybe you can recognize that when one of the hindrances is present. And like if ill will is present and the opposite of goodwill, and then it's like wearing these colored glasses and then we see the world through this lens of ill will. If we're angry with someone or co-worker or partner or anyone, then, you know, we might get also like upset when we knock over a glass of water. Well, normally we might just stay really calm and just relax and like, oh, whatever. But when we're already wearing those glasses of anger, and knocking over a glass of water becomes frustrating as well. So it's kind of like coloring our perception in those moments. And the Buddha offers this beautiful simile about the hindrances flowing down, or this flowing river, and then the hindrances preventing this flowing by these irrigation channels that are being opened by someone. And just scattering the flow down the mountain of the river so that it becomes harder for the water, all the water, to reach the ocean. And then that's my simile, the ocean, offers as a symbol for Nibbana, for awakening. And so this is one of the similes that is interesting that can really show us how hindrances can be, can work in our minds. It's like they scatter the mind. And then clear seeing is not so available anymore. And so this all sounds maybe a little depressing, or maybe a little bit like bad news. But, you know, it is maybe, you know, useful to prevent the hindrances from arising as much as we can, or trying to dissipate them when they arise. But the truth is that the hindrances are going to be part of our lives, part of our practices. And it's only at full awakening that all of the hindrances are going to be fully uprooted and fully dissipated. So it's not really a personal failure if they show up. And if we do see it as a personal failure or as something that has gone wrong in our practice, then it will not really help our practice. The interesting thing is that what is actually most helpful is to actually open to the hindrances, like I guided in the meditation, to really open to them and humbly acknowledge them. And then we can just see them as something to work with, something to investigate and learn from. Like a chance to gain wisdom, a chance to grow in our practice. So the word hindrance or obstruction might not be super helpful, because then we have this negative connotation. Maybe we can see them as opportunities or mind states that can be fertile ground for insight. And I also like the simile of the lotus flower growing out of the mud. And we now, without mud, no lotus flower. Hindrances being the mud. And so I also want to look at some of the similes that the Buddha uses for each of the hindrances. And so go a little bit deeper into each of them and then offer those similes that can also really help us to gain more insight into the hindrances. They can be a very fertile ground for reflection and opening to hindrances when we have these similes that we can fall back on, or we can bring to mind in our practice. And so there's this sutta, this discourse of the Buddha, where there is this Brahmin. Brahmin is the, in India, was the highest caste of noble people in India. And so this Brahmin, Sangharava, he asks the Buddha why sometimes he can't remember hymns that he has recited before. And then the Buddha answers that it is about the hindrances being present or not. And he gives a simile for each of the hindrances. And so the Buddha starts with the hindrance of sense desire or sense lust, sensual lust sometimes translated as well. So sense desire or sensual lust. In Pali, this word is kamma chanda. And chanda simply means desire, and that's kind of neutral. And kamma is like a strong word referring to sense pleasures or sense passion, and also the sexual component, sexual lust. And so this is according to Gil Fronsdal, Kamachanda refers to compulsive preoccupation with sensual pleasure and comfort. And so traditionally, it's any desire that arises at the five physical senses, the body, the touch, the hearing, the seeing, the tasting, the smelling. And so it is a mental phenomena itself, desire. The teachings traditionally say that this desire that is connected to any of the five physical senses, the sixth sense is the mind. I also like to include the mind because we can have also desires for certain mind states. So it's also useful to look at those, of course. And we might have desire for certain foods or desire to look at something beautiful like artwork or like the fall leaves here in Virginia. They are almost gone, but still some left. And so, back to that sutta, that discourse where this Brahmin Sangharava asked about the hymn practice, this recitation practice that the Brahmins were used to doing. They were used to doing a lot of recitation of hymns. It was really an oral tradition. And the thing is that this teaching around the hymns, the recitation, might be not only about the remembering of the recitation of the hymns, it might also be about clear seeing. So the teaching actually goes beyond what Sangharava asked for. And Buddha takes the opportunity to teach more than what Sangharava asks for. And so the passage in the sutta reads as follows. This is the Anguttara Nikaya 4655, for those interested. So the Buddha says, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by sensual lust, overwhelmed by sensual lust, and one does not understand as it really is the escape from arisen sensual lust, on that occasion, one neither knows nor sees as it really is one's own good, or the good of others, or the good of both, then even those hymns that have been recited over a long period do not recur to the mind, let alone those that have not been recited. So, end quote. And so when there is sense desire or sensual lust in this translation, and then we don't really see how we can overcome this or escape, as the Buddha calls it, how we can make it dissipate. And it's also hard to see the good of others, the good of ourselves. As like in this other quote that I quoted earlier. And so there's also this not clear seeing. This not clear seeing of what's going on. And also why we can't recite the hymns or not recollect the hymns. And so then the Buddha continues with the simile to make the teaching even more clear. He says, suppose, Brahmin, there is a bowl of water mixed with black, turmeric, blue dye, or crimson dye. If a man with good sight were to examine his own facial reflection in it, he would neither know nor see it as it really is. So too, Brahmin, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by sensual lust, overwhelmed by sensual lust, and one does not understand as it really is the escape from sensual lust. On that occasion, one neither knows nor sees as it really is one's own good, or the good of others, or the good of both. Then on that occasion, even those hymns that have been recited over a long period do not occur to the mind, let alone those that have not been recited. And so the simile is the bowl of water with this color to dye. And the Buddha gives a simile with a bowl of water for each hindrance. And for sense desire, it's this bowl mixed with color to dye. And so this is often what happens, right? This is kind of these glasses, these colored glasses that we look through, might even you know, sense desire might even look really nice. you might enjoy this vibrancy of the color. But in the meanwhile, we don't really clearly see our own reflection, and we just see a very colored version of reality. And so next time we experience sense desire, we have some craving for something, some wanting, some grasping, then we can bring to mind the simile of the bowl with the colored dye and how our view is obstructed by the vibrant colors, by this attractive view of something that has gotten our attention. Like there's not a clear seeing anymore. And so then there's another simile, and this is also a simile that he offers for each variation, for each of the hindrances. And this is the Majjhima Nikaya 39. There he says, after the meal, they return for alms round, sit down cross-legged, set their body straight, and establish mindfulness in front of them. Giving up sense desire for the world, they meditate with a heart rid of sense desire, cleansing the mind of sense desire. Giving up ill will and malevolence, they meditate with a mind rid of ill will, full of compassion for all living beings, cleansing the mind of ill will. Giving up dullness and drowsiness, they meditate with a mind rid of dullness and drowsiness. Perceiving light, mindful and aware, cleansing the mind of dullness and drowsiness. Giving up restlessness and remorse, they meditate without restlessness, their mind peaceful inside, cleansing the mind of restlessness and remorse. And giving up doubt, they meditate having gone beyond doubt, not undecided about skillful qualities, cleansing the mind of doubt. And so this sutta is much longer, and the Buddha explains in this sutta how to get to a state where the hindrances are giving up or where they are cleansed. And so some of the things he mentions to get to where we can get to the point of the hindrances being given up are sila, which is a Pali word meaning ethical conduct, virtuous conduct, and non-harming. Restraining the sense doors, moderation in eating, being dedicated to wakefulness, being mindful of the body, mindful of postures, mindful of activities. And so then we have this basis where we basically have learned to work with the hindrances, like practice of mindfulness and the awareness of all these activities and postures, etc. And we're learning how to deal with the hindrances through mindfulness. And so now the simile for sense desire from the Majjhima 39. Suppose a person who has gotten into debt were to apply themselves to work and their efforts proved successful, they would pay off the original loan and have enough left over to support their partner. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. And so here the Buddha compares sense desire with getting into debt, and the freedom from sense desire with the freedom from debt. So this is also a powerful simile. Like if we are in sense desire, if we are caught by sense desire, we are going to glued to our object. We're so attached to it that we become dependent on it. We let it live us. And like a creditor holds us in our grip. And then when we pay off the debt, this grip is released. So this could be an interpretation. And the beauty of these similes is that if you reflect on them, that you might find other ways to interpret the similes. Maybe this has to do with that we crave for things that aren't ours to crave for. And so we get ourselves into debt, so to speak. That could be another interpretation. And so then I want to continue with ill will, the second hindrance, Vayapada in the Pali language. And often translated as ill will, the opposite of goodwill, but also sometimes just all aversive states are named under this hindrance. All irritation and frustration and all aversion. And this ill will translation really points to the hostile aspect of the mind about wanting to do harm. While the aversion translation points to the not wanting, the pushing away quality of the mind. And then the bowl simile for ill will is that he says, suppose, Brahman, there is a bowl of water being heated over a fire, bubbling and boiling. If a man with good sight were to examine his own facial reflection in it, he would neither know nor see it as it really is. And so too, Brahman, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by ill will. And so here the Buddha points to ill will being like a bowl of water being heated over a fire, bubbling and boiling. I think this is really apt simile. We really can feel like when we are experiencing ill will or aversion that our mind is like boiling and hot. So, you know, can really, they bring to mind a simile when we feel this anger, aversion, this ill will, like, oh yeah, this really feels hot and boiling and bubbling. The fire of anger, the fire of ill will. And we can also maybe realize how unpleasant this actually is to have this fire boiling our little pot of water. And then the second, a simile for ill will. Suppose a person was sick, suffering, and gravely ill. They'd lose their appetite and get physically weak. But after some time, they'd recover from that illness and regain their appetite and strength. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. And so the Buddha compares ill will with being sick, gravely ill. And I think this is also a really good simile because it does seem like, you know, we're sick if we are experiencing ill will or anger. It's kind of like being out of balance in our minds instead of in our bodies. And then another way of aspect of this interpretation or this simile could be that when we are sick, then we don't really have an appetite for food. And food does not agree with us. And then we don't really want to eat. And when we are aversive or full of ill will, then we can't really let in the nourishment of the Dharma. And we just would get angry at hearing or reading the Dharma. I'd just be like, never mind. I just wanted to cook here in my little pot of water over the fire. And so we can also, for this simile, be inspired in our own way. Like, if we reflect on it, sit with it, many different types of interpretations can come up. And then the third hindrance, sloth and torpor, tinamita in Pali. And these words don't say much to me as a native speaker, but there are other translations as well. And this one is from a Bhikkhu Bodhi about tinna or sloth. Sloth is sluggish or dullness of mind. Its characteristic is lack of driving power. Its function is to dispel energy. It is manifested as sinking of the mind. Its proximate cause is unwise attention to boredom and drowsiness. And so this is about sluggishness, dullness of mind. And then the Bhikkhu Bodhi about Mida or torpor. Torpor is the morbid state of the mental factors. Its characteristic is unwieldiness, and its function is to smother. It is manifested as drooping or nodding and sleepiness. And its proximate cause is the same as that of sloth, namely of unwise attention to boredom and drowsiness. And so these two states are together the hindrance, sloth and torpor, and they both have a slightly different flavor. And the sloth, the first one, might be more of a mental phenomena, while the torpor might be more physical, and drowsiness or dullness, sleepiness. And then, so let's go look at the first simile. He says, suppose, Brahmin, there is a bowl of water covered with water plants and algae. If a man with a good sight were to examine his own facial reflection in it, he would neither know nor see it as it really is. And so too, Brahmin, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by sloth and torpor, overwhelmed by sloth and torpor, then he wouldn't see it as neither how it is. I really like this simile as well, because it can really feel like our body or mind is full of algae and water plants. It's really an unclearness of mind, clearly. And yeah, see, it's almost time and there's more to say about this, of course, but it might be good to, you know, reflect on it yourself. But how does this land for you? This water with algae and water plants. And then we'll continue with the other simile for sloth and torpor. The Buddha says, suppose a person was imprisoned in a jail, but after some time they were released from jail, safe and sound, with no loss of wealth. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. And it can be like that when we are drowsy, sluggish, that we're kind of imprisoned by this state of mind, not easy to escape this. And it feels like we're stuck. So this can be a really apt simile too, to reflect on when drillness and drowsiness is there. So then restlessness and worry. Udaccha and kukuccha in Pali. So these are also a pair. And this is about the inability to calm the mind and focus one's energy. And so the restlessness is more about like this agitated state of mind, this not calmness, this not focusedness, kind of being all over the place. It can be really bodily as well, like not being able to sit still. And the worry is about the trend, about the remorse, about either remorse about the past or the worry about the future, and mental activity around that. And the simile the Buddha offers, the first one with the bowl, is that he says, suppose, Brahmin, there is a bowl of water stirred by the wind, rippling, swirling, churned into wavelets. So I really like this. I mean, I like all of them. I keep saying that. Because we can really feel like our minds are just, or our bodies are just tossed around by the wind. So we can really reflect on that as well when we feel restless, like, oh yeah, this really feels like our bowl is being, you know, swept by the wind. And then a second simile is the following. Suppose a person was a slave. They would not be their own master, but indentured to another, able to go where they wish. But after some time, they'd be freed from servitude. They would be their own master, not indentured to another. An emancipated individual, able to go wherever they wish. And thinking about this, they would be filled with joy and happiness. And, you know, this is pretty strong language, especially in our times. And also in the Buddha's times, there were slaves. It was common. And that's not much talked about, but this was part of the society. And the cool thing is that slaves could ordain and be free. And there are stories of the masters of the slaves paying respect to a former slave who ordained. So that's a little bit of my historic context. And so one way to look at this is that when we're restless, we might feel kind of like a slave to what's happening. We feel like we need to get up. We can't really resist it. We are kind of needing to do whatever the body mind wants. And it's really difficult to just sit still and calm like we want to, actually, but then the body or the mind is really really not listening to us. So, of course, being a slave is so much more intense, worse than the restlessness or worry that we have in meditation. So it's a bit of strong language, I think. But you might still be able to see how this simile applies. And so the last hindrance is doubt, vicikiccha in Pali. And so this is about the doubt that we have about the Dhamma, about the teachings, or about our own ability to practice, or about our ability to reach a certain goal we set for our practice, or doubt about the teacher. So these are all Dhamma-related doubts. It's not so much about you're doubting if you should, you know, buy this peanut butter or the other one, you know. It's really about Dhamma. And there are wholesome and useful doubts. Bill Fronsdale makes a distinction between hindering doubts and questioning doubts. And the hindering doubts are unhelpful, and the questioning ones can be helpful. Like when you're not sure what the practice is about, you might doubt it, and you might be, you know, not sure. And then it might be good to check in with someone who is further along on the path, or someone you trust. So then the simile: there's a bowl of water that is turbid, unsettled, muddy, placed in the dark. So this is also, you know, really interesting. So it's not only muddy, but it's also placed in the dark. So even, you know, even if it was a clear bowl of water in the dark, we can still don't see anything, but it's also muddy. So if the muddy bowl was in the light, we could still not see our reflection. So it's kind of this double whammy, it seems to me. So it's really interesting to reflect on as well. This double whammy of doubt. And then the second simile: suppose there was a person with wealth and property who was traveling along a desert road. But after some time, they crossed over the desert, safe and sound, with no loss of wealth. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. I like to see doubt as, you know, we're in this desert and we're devoid of one of the most important nutriments that we need, water. And so when doubt is present, we are devoid of faith, or sometimes translated as confidence. Confidence, trust is such an important nourishment for the practice. And if we are in the grip of doubt, this nourishment is gone, like there's no water in the desert. And so it's really important to see doubt when it arises, and to be aware of it and not let ourselves be tricked by it. We don't have to believe the thoughts of doubt. And so these were the similes of the hindrances: sense desire compared by a bowl mixed with colored dye, and by being in debt, or being free from debt, being free from sense desire. Ill will being compared to a bowl of water being heated over a fire, bubbling and boiling, and with being sick and gravely ill. Sloth and torpor being compared to a bowl of water overgrown by algae and water plants, and with being in jail. Restlessness and worry being compared by a bowl stirred by the wind, and with being a slave, and doubt being compared by a bowl of water that is muddy and placed in a dark room, and also with a person traveling the desert. So these are some rich images we can use in our practice. We can let our practice be supported by these images. We can reflect on them. What is our insight into those images? How can they support us? How can they give us more insight into these hindrances, into these states of mind and body that sometimes visit us? So I want to end with a quote by the late monk Jnanaponika Thera. Every step in weakening these hindrances takes us nearer to the stages of sanctity where deliverance from these hindrances is unshakable.